All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
Good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Throneberry and I'm just here today to introduce Jim Fossone and his interviews with Navy SEAL Nick Edden. Jim is going to be talking with Nick about a couple of projects that Nick is involved with. Number one is the Veterans Cannabis Project that was founded by Nick to help military veterans improve their quality of life through access to medical cannabis. And secondly, he's going to be talking with Nick about what it was like to move from the battlefield to the boardroom as an investment and venture capitalist professional. Nick is a Navy Academy graduate, and he will be discussing his military and business careers with Jim. Also, I wanted to add in a quick update on an event that's coming up this coming week, actually. And on Thursday, February 22nd, the Canton Community Foundation is going to host its first annual career fair for all military veterans. The event is being held at Livonia's Madonna University in the Take 5 Lounge from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. This is a free event, and registration is not required. More than 20 employers will be present, ready to do on-site interviews. Some of the participating employers include Beaumont Hospital, Bush's, Comfort Keepers, the Detroit VA, Gilmar Manufacturing, Henry Ford, Jack Demmer Ford, LOC Performance, MSA Transportation, Republic Services, Shakely's, Skyway Precision, St. Joseph Health System, and so forth. They suggest that you dress for success. For this, bring plenty of resumes with you. There will also be representatives from Madonna University, Lawrence Tech, and Washtenaw Community College will be on hand to discuss registration and programs for veterans. So mark your calendar right now. This is coming up this Thursday, February 22nd. The Canton Community Foundation is hosting its first annual career fair for all military veterans at Livonia's Madonna University in the Take 5 Lounge from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Be there, be square, as they say. All right, so right now we're going to be going to the interview. Jim Fossone is going to be interviewing, as I mentioned before. He's going to be interviewing Nick Edden. So right now I'm going to turn it over to Jim.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Nick Edden. Nick is a Navy veteran. We're going to talk a little bit about that, and he's also got quite a business career, and we want to make sure we talk a little bit about that. So, Nick, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me today, Jim. I appreciate it.
Well, Nick, you graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy. Let me start there. What sort of led you to a military career, and more importantly, maybe what led you to the Naval Academy?
It's interesting, Jim. I think when I first got the idea to go to the Naval Academy, having grown up in Chicago, we'd spend a lot of time going down to South Bend on the weekends for Notre Dame football games. And I remember when I was young, attending a couple of games where Navy showed up to play Notre Dame, unsuccessfully, unfortunately, in those years. It might have been the uniforms. It might have been something about what I saw, just having that first interaction with midshipmen from the Naval Academy. But it stuck on me. And then when I was applying to the Naval Academy, it was the era of Top Gun. So I was all in at that point.
Well, Nick, when did you graduate?
I graduated in 1989.
And can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
Sure. I graduated in 1989. At first, when I was at school, I thought I wanted to be a pilot. It was the year of Top Gun. But two things changed that. First was my eyesight wasn't 20/20. But that worked out, at least for me, for the better. At that time, the SEAL teams weren't quite, or I should say, Naval West Special Warfare wasn't quite as well known as it is now. But I got my first introduction to SEALs while at the Naval Academy, saw what Naval Special Warfare was all about, and competed to get one of those spots, and was lucky enough to go to BUDS after I graduated from the Naval Academy.
And I think most of our listeners here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking to Nick Edden, would understand that process. Obviously, you got through that grueling process. Tell us a little bit about how your career developed from there.
It was definitely grueling, and I think I got through by the skin of my teeth. But after that, I was assigned to SEAL Team 3, and it was the early 1990s. At that time, SEAL Team 3, the way that the teams were broken up is that each team covered a different region of the world. So SEAL Team 3 was assigned to Southeast Asia, so I did deployment to Southeast Asia and spent some time over there. And then coming back stateside after that deployment, I got the opportunity to go to language school to learn Spanish and was then assigned to SBU 26 out of Panama, which at that time, the position of billet that I took was as the Riverine Warfare Officer. So that was a really unique job and a unique time. Working in South America with our riverine boat unit.
Did your family background, was there military folks in your background, or did they see this crazy career choice you were going and throw their hands up and go, what is our son doing?
I think they supported it all along. My family doesn't have an extensive military background. And in fact, one of my uncles said, thankfully somebody finally joined the military. They were going to call us out on it. So, so I think they were happy with it. And then subsequently, one of my younger brothers, followed me into the military and served in the Marine Corps for a few years after I left the Navy.
Well, you got to see some of the great wonders of the world, right? Southeast Asia and Panama.
I certainly did. It was a lot quieter time, and it was a lot easier being a SEAL in the 1990s than post 9/11. So For me, it was a very rewarding experience. I think it is for most people, but it was a quiet time, and I did get to see a lot of the world. But what was interesting, having been a political science major in college or at the Naval Academy, and then serving in South America, is I became very aware of drug policy. I studied policy and thought I was maybe going back to school for a master's degree in foreign policy. So I very much studied what was going on in Latin America, and having learned to speak Spanish and trying to understand what most of our activity at that time was around the drug wars in Latin America. So I became very immersed in that and have been a student of policy ever since.
Well, it's interesting because, you take what you obviously were a smart kid to get in the academy, a smart kid out of Chicago, send them to a couple of jungle regions, a whole lot different than Chicago. So I suspect it was quite a eye-opening a career in that regards to see what you saw, the cultures you ran into, the different approaches to life. How do you feel that shaped you?
It shaped me a lot. It made me understand just how strong the U.S. is. It made me understand just how good we have it here. And it's not perfect, right? We've been through a lot of upheaval over the past 15 years, but I don't think it's all that different than the decades before and generations before. We're always in constant movement, constant progress, and it's in that movement is not always easy. But it definitely made me appreciate what we have here in the U.S., and I think that really boils down to the freedom to make choices and the freedom to define our lives.
And Nick, did you during this period, because obviously the years are passing, your leadership roles are increasing, your exposure is expanding. Talk a little bit about the people that you ran into and worked with. I think it's always good for our veteran radio listeners to hear about sort of those experiences as well.
It was I'm glad you brought that up. It was I think the ability, so both within the military and in the individuals that I worked with in the military, as well as the people I met overseas, whether it was another foreign military or the foreign, especially when I worked in South America, I worked with a lot of foreign military groups. Having that exposure has really, I think, served me well in my career once I got out of the military. But I now working with veterans and on veteran health issues, I came back to this because I think at the core of it, I loved working. I loved being in the military. I loved working with people in the military. I loved the common bond and shared commitment to service. And I haven't found that necessarily outside of my experience in the military, having been in more general business. It's not to say that those experiences have been good in their own ways, but now being involved back in veterans and specifically veteran health issues, it's great to be working back with a lot of the people that I was with 15, 20 years ago.
Well, and while we all are from that, you know, if you will, the veteran tribe, we're all kinds of different backgrounds and diversity and experiences, and I think that's what a lot of us like. I think that's what you're referring to, is that you really got a chance to work with a lot of different great people who maybe brought perspectives you didn't bring to the table, I suspect.
Absolutely. The one thing I love about veterans, and I think when we were back on active duty, is that we all come from very different backgrounds, which brings very different perspectives to it. And I constantly have to educate non-veterans on the fact that veterans we're not a single stereotype. We're not all the same. We're exactly as you said. We're from very different backgrounds with different interests, different thoughts, different ideas. But I think what unites us is that shared commitment to service, a belief in something outside of ourselves. And also what I think, which is key, and especially with the issues that I work on right now, is that veterans are pragmatic and solution focused, and they have the ability to see past maybe old ideas or the way things were done in the past, and embrace change that delivers solutions for what we need. And I think that's really at the core of veterans and the veteran experience, which is why I love working with veterans on these health issues now.
So, Nick, tell our veteran radio listeners sort of how your military career ended and how you began transitioning back into the both civilian but business life.
So, yeah, I think it was at about the 5-6 year point. I realized I didn't want to spend a career in the Navy, and started looking outside of it, and I somehow find my way to business school, and I think it was I would love to say that it was all by design, but there was a bit of kicking the can down the road, and then I applied to law school and business school. And and saw it as a way to transition and find a way to figure out what I wanted to do next. But it was a good experience. I got an MBA and I started working in finance. I went to San Francisco and worked as an investment banker, primarily on technology deals or early stage at that time early stage internet deals. Then went to work for a venture capital fund for a couple of years doing investments in cybersecurity, and then happened to know the founders of a company called Triple Canopy, which at the time was starting up to provide security services over in the Middle East. And they asked me to join that company as it was forming up, so I joined Triple Canopy. And that was a very unique time and an interesting experience with Triple Canopy.
And I guess one of the things, and listeners, we're talking to Nick Edden, who's a Navy veteran, a SEAL. What rank did you hold when you exited about 1995 or so, Nick?
I was a lieutenant.
As you move forward into the finance world and you found yourself dealing with technology deals and cybersecurity issues, did your background in the military, was that somehow infused into the finance evaluation and deals you were looking at?
I think for me it was always something that I tried to I always sought out other veterans to work with, and the world of investment banking and finance was very different than my experience in the military, and so I sought out veterans to work with because I was very comfortable working with veterans. There was the shared common bond and an understanding that we were going to do things in a professional and responsible and straightforward manner was why I sought out other veterans to work with. So the experience helped me, but it was very different moving into that world, and I had to learn a whole new set of rules, which were very different from the rules that or the culture that I worked in the military.
And I think maybe that's one of the pearls of wisdom you're passing along here, which is, you know, we're taking a guy who had a BS in political science, has time in the service, sort of somewhat by happenstance ends up in a really fine MBA program. Happenstance only in that you weren't sure what you wanted to do. You're at the Kellogg Graduate School of Management at Northwestern University, which is a great reputation, and you springboard into an area of finance that you were willing to take a risk into that worked out pretty well, but you had to be comfortable taking the risk, didn't you?
Yeah, there was risk involved in it, and it was a good experience, but I will say it was a great experience, and I learned a lot. I think I learned a lot that built upon my experience in the military in how to be effective in some different environments. So it was very much a learning process for me, and I'm constantly learning. For me, as I think about my career and what I do, I don't think of it necessarily in a linear fashion that I'm trying to rise up to a particular spot or title. I've tended to pursue things that I have found interesting or engaging, especially as it relates to my interest in policy, whether that be international policy or veterans issues. And so it was definitely a learning environment in finance, and I gained skills that I feel helped me be very effective in today and in what I'm currently doing now.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about what you're on the business side, what you're doing today?
Yeah, so after I left Triple Canopy, I became involved with a transportation security company down in Austin, Texas. And about 10 years ago, I was in finance, but I was more specifically in the security business. So anything from at one end cybersecurity all the way to physical security services at where Triple Canopy was working at the tip of the spear overseas, providing services to the State Department. So having spent all that time in the security industry, I was drawn out to Colorado a couple of years ago as we were getting calls from startup security companies out on the West Coast who are working in the legal cannabis industry. And it was something that was very, very new to me. I paid attention to what was going on, and I had seen that obviously California had had medical marijuana since 1996. But it was in the process of meeting up with a lot of security companies out on the West Coast. And most of those companies are owned and run by veterans. There are, I say most of them, I don't have an official count, but the security and security services industry around the legal cannabis market is full of veterans who had the opportunity to start their own companies and provide meaningful services. So I became aware of what was going on in that market. But in that process, I became aware of something else that fueled what I'm very focused on today, and that was the narrative of veterans at the intersection of cannabis was becoming louder and more vocal. And it was it's a result of ineffectual treatment for veterans' health issues over the last 15 years as we look at issues such as post-traumatic stress, brain injury, chronic pain. And I saw veterans were finding relief in cannabis, which they weren't getting from medications or therapies that were either being provided by the private market or the VA. And so that's what led me to where I am today.
Well, I want to close out this portion of the interview with maybe some advice you might give veteran business owners. We talked a little earlier off air about your familiarity with Bunker Labs. Do you want to talk about how there are groups out there that help veterans in the business space?
Yeah, there's great organizations like Bunker Labs that are helping veterans take control of their lives and their careers and teaching them not only giving them the skills that they need not only to transition into the workforce, but also gain control of that themselves. I small business is popping up again. The world of startup, of the ecosystem of that world has grown immensely over the last 15, 20 years. It's not easy for veterans to just break into that because it can be somewhat of a closed environment. So organizations like Bunker Labs are great in helping veterans bridge that transition. I will say in the space that I work in right now, which is the cannabis market, our organization, the Veterans Cannabis Project, one of our main goals is to see that this industry, 15 years from now, or 10 years from now, has a workforce of 15% veterans. I work with many, many veteran-owned and veteran-led businesses, whether it's in cultivation, dispensing, whether it's security businesses, all throughout the different verticals that exist in that industry. And why veterans are really valuable to that industry, which is offers one of the best opportunities. It's one of the best new market opportunities in this country for veterans is our ability to work in a highly regulated environment where compliance is mandatory and transparency needs to be above board at all times. Fits very well with the generalized veteran experience. And so we're finding veterans having a lot of success in the industry as it continues its transition from what was something previously illegal to a very legal, especially medicinally focused market, and there's also a very strong crossover for serving other veterans as it relates to their medical needs.
Well, I want to thank you, Nick Eden, for spending some time with us on this interview, talking about your military and business career. It's been it's a very diverse and impressive business career. I think it shows everybody that other veterans that, you know, you can have these kinds of experiences, and more importantly, tells us that veterans will stick together working in the business world. That's what you found. And so if you're out there thinking about getting into the business world, don't be reluctant to use that network, because that network really wants to help out. And again, thanks, Nick, for being on Veterans Radio. And we're going to talk about the policy issues in our next interview.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Torpedo Man Second Class Henry Brault closed a hatch on his sunken submarine, trapping him and a shipmate. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
On the morning of 28 October 1923, the U.S. submarine O5 collided with a steamship and sank in less than a minute. When the collision occurred, Brault was in the torpedo room. Upon reaching the hatch, he saw that the boat was rapidly sinking. Instead of jumping overboard to save his own life, he returned to the torpedo room to the rescue of a shipmate whom he knew was trapped in the boat, closing the torpedo room hatch on himself. Brault and Brown remained trapped in this compartment until rescued by the salvage party 31 hours later. The Medal of Honor was presented by President Coolidge at the White House on 8 March 1924.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
We want to welcome Nick Edden back to Veterans Radio. Nick wears a number of hats. He is the executive director of the Veterans Cannabis Project, and we're here today to talk about that particular project. Nick, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
So why don't we start with you telling us about the Veterans Cannabis Project?
Sure. The Veterans Cannabis Project is committed to helping veterans improve their quality of life through the opportunity of cannabis. And that takes a couple of different forms. First is with respect to health issues for veterans. We've seen over the past 15 years that the structure that's been in place to support and serve veterans as it relates to their health needs, and specifically the VA, was ill-prepared and unequipped to deal with the wounds, the signature wounds of the wars of the past 15 years. And this is not meant to, is me bashing the VA. It's just the reality of dealing with a very large healthcare system, which could not have ever forecasted how things began to change in 2003. And when you look at health issues such as traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, and chronic pain, which is really the key issue that we see that we're dealing with the most, is that chronic pain, for example, is upwards of what 60% of what the VA treats with. We all worked in very demanding physical environments, and so it's natural that as we get older, those bumps and bruises start to rise to the surface. But with a system that has been searching desperately for answers to these types of wounds, we saw that not only did the VA or the system not have that solution, they compounded the problem by throwing a lot of prescription opiates and other very addictive drugs at veterans. They had neither the infrastructure nor the specialization needed to deal with these, and so that problem became compounded. And what we saw happening, especially out west or throughout the entire country, was veterans were finding relief from these conditions through cannabis. And so I created this organization for a number of different reasons, which we can get into. Cannabis is can be very complicated. It doesn't need to be, but at its core, especially as it relates to veterans, this is a health policy issue.
And I should remind our listeners here on Veterans Radio that Nick Edden graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy, serves, I believe, it was 6 years in the Navy, went through the SEAL program and served on SEAL Team 3 in the 90s. So your passion for addressing policy issues for veterans and veteran health issues comes both out of those experiences, but as, you know, sort of a larger policy concern that you've been interested in. And this has become a complicated issue because the VA, the federal level, and the state, the various states, are really out of sync. Can you talk a little bit about how the Veterans Cannabis Project tries to deal with that on a policy concern?
Yeah, thank you. So that's where we're very focused right now, is with this as a policy issue, specifically at the federal level. You hit the heart of this matter is to where we're addressing that, and that is the disconnect or the disparity between law at the state level and law at the federal level. We've seen 30 states now have medical marijuana programs, and we see that they are working for a large number of patients, of which veterans are a significant portion of those patients. We see it working really well for, as I mentioned earlier, chronic pain, but it's proven and demonstrated itself to be a very effective medicine for a lot of different conditions. But as veterans, we're in a very unique position. So say, for instance, I am a veteran and I live in the state of Colorado. I could go and get a medical marijuana card that would give me access to medicinal cannabis in Colorado. But as a veteran, I face a lot of hurdles. First is there's a cost. And the cost is not insignificant. So I've got to pay for this outside of the health system that I would generally rely on. Second is, because there is the disparity in the laws between the state level and the federal level, veterans are concerned about potential loss of benefits because this is still technically illegal at the federal level. And we don't rely on a state healthcare system, we rely on a federal health system. And so veterans are selecting not to get those cards because they're concerned about getting on a list that ultimately could have an impact on their hard-earned benefits. And what that does is it forces the veteran to then go outside of the system and break the law. There's also a lot of confusion within the system of the VA. The VA can either prescribe, recommend, or dispense cannabis as medicine. And even though the VA has said that their physicians have freedom to talk or speak with veterans about their use of cannabis as medicine, veterans, again, are in a catch-22 position because they're now disclosing something that within that system is considered illegal. And so this issue, we're in the process of breaking this issue down on many fronts, whether it relates to the VA or the dynamic interplay between the state and federal level. But ultimately, where we're focused and where Veterans Cannabis Project is focused is we want cannabis to be treated as a health policy issue. We want it to be moved off of Schedule 1. Schedule 1 for it's a medicine that doesn't have any beneficial applications. And we know that's not true for cannabis. So we want it moved off of Schedule 1, and we want to get it into our world-class research system here in the United States, which it hasn't been in because it's still in Schedule 1 at the federal level.
Well, I want to get to that in a moment. I want to get to the recent comments by the VA Secretary, Dr. Shulkin. But I want to back up for a moment because I think the policy issue or what should be the outcome of the policy issue for veterans is that they have safety in knowing that if I'm in a state that has medical cannabis and I use that, I'm not going to lose my benefits. And many veterans, we heard about them here at our disability law firm a year ago when the VA all of a sudden decided, we've got an opioid problem. We prescribe way too many opioids. And they started taking guys off opioid prescriptions, or did the reverse and said, "Well, we tested your blood; you don't have any opioids in your system. We've prescribed them. Since they're not in your system, you must be selling the opioids." And we had guys flipping out on both ends of this because there was no there was no safety, no comfort that you were being handled as a patient, as compared to some sort of problem. And I think if I'm in that medical cannabis space, I have this same problem. Because you haven't settled what the policy is, I end up being this pawn, and I don't know which way I'm going to get whipsawed in this.
You're absolutely correct. This has been a challenge. And as we look at what the VA has done with the new opiate program, look, they ostensibly had veterans on prescriptions for a reason. A doctor has to have a reason for that prescription. And as we talked about, generally, you know, for opiates, it's around chronic pain. But we saw that it's a very debilitating or very challenging medication for mild to moderate chronic pain because of the inherent addiction involved with those medications. And so when the VA started to roll that back, now you nailed it. There's a whole host of problems. Veterans are getting tested if they do have medication or if they do have prescriptions for an opiate and get tested and show cannabis in their system, well, then they're classified as somebody who's got a cannabis disuse disorder, or cannabis abuse disorder. And so they're just stopping prescriptions that veterans have, and that's even more dangerous. You know, what was really interesting was I sat in a Senate committee hearing in November, and it was one of the senators was asking the head of the opiate control program for the VA, you know, what have you done to replace opiates for veterans' chronic pain issues? And his response was yoga and equine therapy. And if it wasn't such a sad answer, you know, I could maybe find a little bit more humor in it. But they haven't. And the problem is, though, cannabis has become such a politicized issue that I think it's very challenging for the VA to deal with it. The VA is a federal agency that acts at the discretion of Congress and the executive branch. And so,
wait a minute. I'm going to give them the pass here because this is where leadership comes in, right? You're a Navy SEAL. This is where leadership comes in. I'm frustrated about the recent statements by VA Secretary David Shulkin in response to a letter to U.S. Representative Tim Walz of Minnesota, where it seems like what the VA is saying, well, we can't even research the issue because we're hampered by the fact that it's a federally illegal drug, so we're throwing our hands up and stopping there. Is that the current status of VA's position on this?
Oh, so it gets worse. And I if it sounded like I was giving the VA a free pass on that, I'm not, because you nailed it. We're missing leadership right now on this issue, and there is a lack of leadership. That was the answer that came out. I think it was about a week ago or so, and that answer is factually incorrect. The VA could absolutely study cannabis. By mandate, it has a responsibility to study anything that could be beneficial to the veteran population that it serves. But that answer became even worse on the following Monday. So that response by Secretary Shulkin had been buried for a while, but it was only covered by one news organization last week. He clarified that response and said, yes, we can legally study it, but it's too difficult to study, so that's why we're not.
Well, again, I think thus the need for the Veteran Cannabis Project that you're founder and executive director on, and I should also tell our listeners that the American Legion did a phone survey. This was released in November, and 22% of veteran household respondents said they used cannabis to treat a medical condition. 92% of those veteran households that were surveyed said they support researching whether marijuana can effectively treat mental and physical conditions. And 82% said they want to have medical cannabis as a legal treatment option. So, you know, this isn't just some wacky idea out of California or Colorado. You've got a lot of momentum on this policy issue, but where do you think it's going, and where do you think, how long is this going to take?
So I'm hoping that we get to resolution in the next 2 years. I mean, I would like to see resolution next month. I'd like to, the issue is, you know, is we talk about the VA, we don't focus a lot of efforts on the VA at this point in time. Where we're spending our time is with members of Congress. Because what needs to happen to solve this problem for veterans, to get cannabis into our world-class research and to treat it as medicine and elevate this as a health policy issue, is Congress needs to act. Cannabis needs to be rescheduled. Now, that can be done by a couple of – it can be done by the Drug Enforcement Agency. They have chosen not to do that. So right now we're pushing on our legislators, our elected representatives, to make that change. And I know they want to do this, but there's years of legacy of misinformation, of cannabis having been elevated as a law enforcement issue rather than a health policy issue that we're working to get over. But I see good movement right now. We have a team of veterans. It rotates around. We have veterans on the Hill speaking with legislators every single month and sharing their experiences as to how cannabis is working for them as an effective, safe, responsible choice as medicine. And legislators, it's been really eye-opening for me that, you know, you mentioned the American Legion study and where veterans stand on this. But unfortunately, our legislators don't necessarily have all the information that they need for whatever reason. But by bringing these stories and by bringing veterans to share their experiences to these key members, to key influencers, and also with organizations like with the VA and a couple of other groups, we're making very positive momentum on shifting the perspective and shifting the narrative that this is some fringe issue or that this is what maybe people thought of marijuana when they thought about it 20 years ago. Look, I grew up in the Just Say No 80s, and the idea of cannabis is the devil's weed and reefer madness. And I've certainly had to come to understand that it is something very different. It's failed policy. But what we're looking at right now is we're looking at a failed policy that is negatively impacting not just veterans, but a lot of patients throughout this country that rely on it as medicine. And so it's great to get polls out. It's great to talk about it on shows such as yours, which is why I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this. But in order to affect change, we need to show up and have these conversations with our representatives every single month at the federal level and hammer this home until the laws are changed.
There are very few veterans in the current Congress of the United States. Are there any veterans or non-veterans Congress folk who are supportive of this move or are advocating for this move that you can identify?
Absolutely. We see individuals such as Representative Tom Garrett out of Virginia, who's an Army veteran. He's a Republican. And look, we deal mostly with Republicans on this issue. Most Democrats, just by the way of platforms now, fully support medical marijuana. So it's primarily Republicans that we're talking about. But a great example is Tom Garrett out of Virginia, Army veteran. Representative Scott Taylor, also out of Virginia, former Navy SEAL, has taken a very positive stance on this. And an individual such as Matt Gaetz, Representative Matt Gaetz, out of Florida, who represents Pensacola, which probably many of your listeners. He is a new congressman, not a veteran, but represents a very big veteran district in Pensacola. He has been one of the most outspoken proponents of medical cannabis, not just for veterans, but for all patients, not only when he served in the Florida State Legislature, but also now as a now serving in Congress. And so we're working with those individuals, but we need to educate more representatives who might not really understand what this means for veterans and how critical this is for veterans that we solve this at the federal level. And again, this is why veterans matter in this, at the federal level in this issue, because although we have very limited access to cannabis as medicine at the state level, and it's not until we get this solved at the federal level and get cannabis rescheduled, the veterans are going to be out of a legal gray zone, which has us, as you said earlier, you know, not completely unsure of which direction is the right way to go.
And Nick Edden, who's the executive director of Veterans Cannabis Project, that's who we're talking to here. Nick, if folks are interested in this issue, interested in the project, tell us how they can follow what you're doing and get involved in what the Veterans Cannabis Project is about.
The best way is to, if you go to our website, which is www.vetscp.org, vetscp.org. You can sign up for our email list on there. In about a couple of weeks, we'll have a spot where veterans can submit an application to join our policy team, which advocates for this on Capitol Hill every month. And then they can also follow us on Facebook, which is a Veterans Cannabis Project on Facebook.
And I see that the project is doing kind of an ongoing series in some publications about veterans whose lives have been impacted by medical cannabis. I think that's a great way to tell the story.
Yeah, I'm writing a monthly series on a property called Leafly, which is a cannabis information, politics, strain, lifestyle website, but we're showcasing veterans who've had the ability to take control of their lives and do great things, whether it's through their careers or whether it's to heal through what cannabis medical marijuana provides. And so we'll be profiling, continue to profile a new veteran every single month on that site.
Well, that's great. Again, we want to encourage our listeners who are interested in helping on this issue to go to www.vetscp.org or follow it on Facebook. Nick Eden, thanks for taking a little time with us today to highlight this issue for our veteran radio listeners.
This is Dale Thronberry again, and I hope you enjoyed today's program with Jim Fausone interviewing Nick Eden. I want to remind you that next week we're going to be doing another one of our benefits programs, and so if you have any questions or concerns or requests that you'd like to have our VA representatives answer, give us a call on the program or send us an email during the week, and just go to veteransradio.net, click on Contact Us. We've had a lot of response to this program, and I'm really excited, and hopefully we can help some of you out there with the questions that you do have. So thanks again for listening, and until next week, you are dismissed.